great to be here, and I'm so happy I was invited for this occasion in honor of John Duran. And I was asked to talk about my research, because I've done work in soil quality, and I've also looked at other sustainability indicators. And so my research and John's research have sort of, there's been some parallel in those. I met John, I think it was in 1994, 1995, at a soil ecology conference at Colorado State University. I don't know if you remember that. And I walked away just thinking, this is a really nice human being. That was my first impression. We talked science, but we also just talked about life. And it was really refreshing to, I knew who you were, knew about your 1994 book. And it was just great for me to meet you, and that first impression, and I've met you since, but that first impression was long-lasting. So the title of my talk is the 25 years I started doing research looking at what I call alternative systems, and those would be things like no-till, organic, integrated, alternative livestock systems. My history working with land classification systems actually goes back to the 70s. I worked with, I got my PhD with Mike Singer, and I was looking at land classification systems. And in the 30s, a person named Earl Story developed the Story Index Rating, which is a soil quality index rating, actually. He revised it in the 70s and then in the 80s. And the USDA Soil Conservation Service, now NRCS, in the late 40s, developed the land capability classification system, and those systems actually still, especially the land capability classification system, still function. So I have that history. And then in 1985, an undergraduate student came to me and wanted to learn about how to measure soil properties in the field. And she was an undergraduate major in soil science, and she had a 2.7 grade point average. And she wanted to also learn about microbiology. And so Lloyd Elliott was in the department at the time. He was a soil microbiologist. And so Lloyd and I taught her the field part. Lloyd taught her the soil microbiology part. And I'm going to show you just briefly the results of the first study I did looking at those alternative farming systems. And I think if Yvonne Unger, she was the undergraduate student that approached me, would not have come in to talk about that, I don't know if I'd be standing here today. So wherever you are, Yvonne, thank you very much. Okay, on with the talk. So I love this. This is probably my best slide. It's real simple. Picture was taken by a colleague of mine, and you probably know him, David Granitstein. He's at Washington State University. It's from two farms side by side in Minnesota, southern Minnesota. These are Mollisols. Farm on the left was basically a two-year rotation, sometimes a one-year corn-soybean, typical conventional farm. Farm on the right was an integrated farm. By integrated, I'm not talking about mixed crop livestock. I'm talking about a blend of organic and conventional, where the farm family pretty much was in a three-year rotation, corn, soybean, and then a green manure. Once in a great while, four-year rotation, 2 years of green manure. So the organic matter was building up. This farmer used synthetic fertilizers and once in a while synthetic pesticides, so it would qualify as an integrated farmer, certainly not organic. And David took these spadefuls of basically the same soil but managed differently for a number of years and set them down, and then took a garden hose and ran the water at not even a moderate pace, slow to moderate pace over the two samples. The one on the left with less carbon, the soil peeled off and you have the corn roots left. The one on the right stayed intact after actually 3 minutes. So it shows the benefit of organic matter. And I'll come back to this at the very end of my talk. So I'm now the 25th person who's... see, I thought I was going to be the only... And I added that at the last minute. I thought I was going to be the only one. And then there's the definition. So I'm not even going to read it, but that's kind of the founding definition of soil quality by Duran and Parkin. And that kind of that certainly helped me to look at soil quality, which can be inferred from different measurable soil properties, biological, physical, and chemical, and I term those soil quality indicators. So that first study that Yvonne Unger came in to ask me about, hey, let's go measure stuff in the field, that turned out to be a pretty big paper and sort of just changed my focus. And we looked at basically soil quality yields and soil erosion on a couple farms, one that was organic and one that was conventional that had been farmed differently for 37 years. And one of the reactions of the study I had, colleagues in economics that came up to me and said, you know, John, who cares about the soil? They're, by the way, they're dead now. And is that really, that hurt. And so why don't you look at, you know, profitability? That's where it's at. And so I went off to, I went off to New Zealand. And another criticism was, well, yeah, but it's only wheat. You just looked at wheat and peas, you know, how about vegetables and apples? And so I went off to New Zealand to look at all these. I did a sabbatical over there for 12 months and at Massey University. And I went over there to find all these organic pairs of organic and conventional farms. And I kept running into these biodynamic farmers. And I thought, oh, that's, they kind of have an interesting system. And I was able to basically pair up 11 adjacent farm pairs from 16 conventional and biodynamic farms. And I probably eliminated another, 20, 30 biodynamic farms because I couldn't pair them up, they had to be directly adjacent, or the soils didn't match. And when I do my studies, the soils have to be pretty much, the layering has to be very close, and the texture, the particle size has to be close. Things that are going to change over a 10, 20, 30-year period of time are going to be the chemistry and the biology, and maybe some physical properties like compaction. And so when you look at this, here's two of the fields these are two of the fields that were eliminated from the study. These are pasture fields from New Zealand, and the field on the right is the organic field, and the field on the left is conventional. And so this was used for actually dairy production. And if you look closer, that's what the soils look like. So your first impression is, wow, those are going to match up perfectly. They're next to each other, but they don't match up at all. You have B horizons in the organic and not in the conventional. That would totally affect your data. You have to throw it out. And so I had to tell the two farmers, I said, I can't use your study. And so setting up when I set up my experiments, this is the most time-consuming part. I always find that the beginning and the closure, the writing, are the most painful. Even though the middle part takes the longest and is probably the most painful for the graduate students that work with me, it's the beginning. And if you get the beginning part right, you're ready to rock. And then writing it up is the other part. And so, without showing you the data, the results of the study, we looked at about 25 different soil properties, and the biological and physical properties just dominated on the biodynamic farms, and that was had a lot to do with just more organic matter additions and more compost, green manures. The chemical analyses were variable. Sometimes you'd have more nitrogen on the organic, more nitrogen on the conventional, or with phosphorus. It wasn't a clear picture. And I also had the financial records over a four-year period of time for the farmers, so I could look at, I had an economist I was working with to compare the profitability of the systems, and the biodynamic farms were as often financially viable on a per-hectare basis as were the adjacent conventional farms. And So this was kind of nice, and I've done some other studies which I won't talk about, and that led to this study where, okay, I've got the economics and the yield down and the soil quality. Let's just keep piling on the sustainability indicators, as I like to call them. And so there are crop quality indicators that are important, and apples are a big crop in Washington State. We grow about, I think right now it's about 55% of all apples in the United States. And so we wanted to look at soil quality, and this work was done with my graduate student, Jerry Glover, and also with a couple farmers. It was their farm that we worked on. They had a 50-acre apple cherry farm. And we also relied on consultants, pest consultants, and we all sat down and talked about this. So this is what would be called, and we had statisticians, we had hort people, this is what we would call a transdisciplinary study, where you have academics and non-academics that come together and share their knowledge base and design a study. And for crop quality, we looked not just at yield, but we looked at the nutrients that would be in the apple from an apple's perspective, but we also looked at the quality of the apple from a human perspective as far as we did look at antioxidant activity, but more the I'm drawing a blank right now. And we also looked at their storage potential, and we also looked at their taste. So we did blind taste test, and we had to use the same size organic, conventional, and integrated apples. We used three systems. So the farmer, the two farmers that owned the property, were interested in going from conventional to either organic or integrated. They thought, well, maybe a blend would work of the two. So I said, well, let's just set up. They had 4 acres that we could play with. We planted the trees fresh on the same rootstock. And so we basically had 12 plots, 4 organic, 4 integrated, and 4 conventional. And we looked at cost and returns. We also looked at, we used a pesticide impact rating that was published, that we looked at the impact of pesticides, and we also looked at energy efficiency of the systems. And this is, it's a, these are dwarf systems. So the trees get, and that's a dwarf tractor, actually. I'm tall, and if I were to walk down, it's like a trellis system. You have wires going across, and so I have to duck so I don't kill myself, and most people do. And the trees probably at the very highest might get, in the summertime, 12, 13, 14 feet. And it's they produce usually full production in 3-4 years, easier to harvest. This is in the Yakima Valley, one of our big apple-producing areas. Golden Delicious apples, M9 rootstock. And it's an on-farmer, grower-managed study. And so here we... and I should have put this up there. I apologize to Doug Carlin and company. Doug, we modified your soil quality index rating system, and we actually published a paper before this where we showed that how we did that modification. So I want to thank you again. Doug's system that we used was used for grain crops, and so we had to make a few modifications for apple production systems. So in the studies before, when we looked at soil quality, we would look at individual properties and kind of summarize what we had. Here we took those properties and put them into an actual index, and what we found is that the organic and integrated systems had better soil quality, and that was mainly because those two systems were getting compost additions and the conventional system was not. And you can see those four variables that go into the index each get 25% of the 100% rating, or 1.0 on the right. And then the other things we found, the yields and tree growth were similar. This was after 6 years of production. But the organic fruit, especially in the last 2 years, was smaller, and that's a negative because you get more money for bigger apples. They sell them by size. But the organic fruit was sweeter, and we measured this in the lab, and it was also seconded by a taste test, and it was always as firm, if not firmer. And that actually surprised me, the firm part, and it's really interesting. You know, you discover these things as a scientist, and you're, wow, that's really big. Well, the people that work in it for Stamilt, where the apples were stored, they knew this 5 years before. You know, it's like we're saying this and we're talking to them, and they say, well, we knew that 5 years ago. I said, well, how'd you do that? Well, because we eat the apples. You know, we, in other words, they've been eating the apples, you know. And it's like, that's so obvious that they're, I mean, you big deal. You know, and I thought, well, that's a big finding. The organic system was more profitable, and that was based on the fact that it had basically equal yields, but it also had the premium, a 50% premium. And so that made a big difference. Both the organic and integrated systems had higher soil quality. They also had potentially lower negative environmental impact. In fact, the organic was first, the integrated second, and the conventional third. The organic system was the most energy efficient, the integrated the second most energy efficient, which is what you would suspect. The integrated always pretty much fell in the middle, and the conventional last. And so if you throw those economic and environmental indicators together, then the organic system would rank first in economic and environmental sustainability, and the integrated second, and the conventional last. So I'm just going to talk about one more study that was just published last year. And so we wanted to look more closely at fruit quality, and not just soil quality, but also fruit quality, not just how fast strawberries rot, but do they have more vitamin C? Does one have more vitamin C than the other, organic versus conventional? There's quite a bit of debate on that. More antioxidant activity. If you want to look at strawberries, you got to go to California. And this study, the one I'm citing is from PLOS One. We also had another paper published. And my grad student that worked on this, she's sitting in the room, Jennifer Reeve. So thank you, Jennifer. She's now assistant professor at Utah State. So she had to do some traveling on this, and so did I. So California produces about 90% of all the strawberries in the United States. And it's quite a bit. They produce 25% of all the strawberries in the world. So if you want to do strawberry research, you go to California. And the heart of it is in the Watsonville area, which is in the southernmost point of Santa Cruz County. And it spills over the Pajaro River into Monterey County, into the Salinas area. And they produce probably about 40-50% of all the strawberries in the state. And then the next area is down further south near Oxnard. It's a real interesting system. It's so intense. I don't care if it's organic or conventional. The soils basically are on 12-inch, 1-foot raised beds, about 24 to 32 inches wide. They tear those beds down in the second year. They build them back up in the third year. So it's big manipulation of the soil. I mean, the soil is really ripped apart. And the soils are either real sandy or real clay. Most of them are real sandy, and I mean loamy sand to sand, baywood, but it's still a mollisol, believe it or not. We were able to find over a 2-year period 13 pairs of farms. So we have these field pairs all side by side, and they were different in the 2 years. So we had 5 pairs in 1 year, and then 8 pairs in the next year. They all had similar soil topography, microclimate. And then we didn't want to just look at one variety, so we looked at 3. And the varieties are Diamante, San Juan, and Lanai. Strawberries are grown. They usually plant them out of the greenhouse in the middle of November. They grow through the winter, and winter in Watsonville is mild. You might have days that get down in the 40s, but usually it's a cold day would be in the 50s. And then by March, middle of March, strawberries are in full production. And so the workers will go out and harvest strawberries about every 3 or 4 days for 7 months straight. They just keep producing. It's amazing. I ate so many damn strawberries. When I'd be down there, it's good. It was in the summertime was the best because your system's kind of already used to eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. There were probably days I had 50, 60 strawberries. I mean, I'm not kidding, because you're just out there eating berries. I mean, why not? What we did is we sampled in each of the seasons, spring, summer, fall, for 2 years. We evaluated the 3 varieties for mineral elements, shelf life vitamin C, phytochemical composition like antioxidants. And we did taste tests, blind taste tests. When you do taste tests, people cannot know, they cannot know they're tasting organic and conventional berries. They just know they're tasting berries. And we had a professional food scientist that we worked with. And I had about 9 people on the team. And then we also analyzed 31 traditional soil properties, and probably about 14 or 15 were biological. Jennifer spent painstakingly many hours in the lab, I also want to thank Jeff Smith, who's here. We consulted with Jeff quite a bit, and we also then looked at the soil DNA using microarray technology. Jennifer went to Oak Ridge National Labs, where they're really good at doing that. And this was on the farms. So what we found is the following. And some of this was a surprise, even though someone mentioned earlier, well, what is it really left to do with soil quality? And it's a really good question, because when you look at the studies, the organic systems, mainly because of the addition of organic matter, come out looking pretty good. But when you do these studies, usually a couple of the properties are more favorable with the other system. But with our study, with 31 of the properties, we had 15 that were significantly higher, and sometimes it was dramatically higher. I mean, 100% more. 15 were significantly higher on the organic, and this is in the top 6 centimeters. We also had similar differences in the subsurface, too, but none were significantly higher in the conventional. I thought, wow, that's amazing. And both treatments are getting compost. The organic strawberry growers add 10 tons of compost per acre on the conventional, which are often the same growers, they own both, add 5 tons. They do that because they add methyl. They do that in their mind because they add methyl bromide as a fumigant, and then afterwards they might come in with compost to revitalize the soil. So they're adding quite a bit of compost. So some of the properties were pretty obvious: more total carbon, nitrogen, greater microbial biomass and activity. We looked at all kinds of biological, microbiological ratios, and we had higher concentrations of micronutrients. The microarray data basically showed, we looked not only at the total gene abundance in the soil samples, but also we looked at 11 functional groups. And those 11 functional groups that were targeted were nitrogen fixation. These are some of them: nitrification, denitrification, pesticide degradation, metal reduction and resistance. There were some enzyme activities that were targeted too. And so what we found is, when you look at the total or when you look at the 11, the organically farmed soil exhibited greater functional gene abundance and diversity. And this was across all, it was across, in total it was true for abundance and diversity, and for the 11 functional groups it was true for abundance. It was true for 10 of the functional groups for diversity. One was a tie. And there were, this particular array looks at 10,000 genes, and there were, I think, 233 unique genes that we found in the organic system. We only found 2 in the conventional system. So it was it's kind of a neat way of looking at soil quality. It's another dimension that you can add on. So because of this, because of having the array, the microarray studies, and also having the 31 properties, when you combine those together, and you really need both of them together, it really suggests that the organically farmed soils had greater microbial functional capability and resilience to stress. And then you say, okay, well, so why were there differences in abundance and diversity? And the rotations were similar. Because I always think, first thing, okay, practices. Rotations were 2-year rotations. Strawberry, next year they would grow lettuces or broccoli. Sometimes they would come in with a cover crop, both conventional and organic. But the big difference was chemical fumigation with methyl bromide on the conventionally farmed soils, lack of synthetic pesticide use on the organic fields, and double the application rate of compost. Same compost used on the fields, just double the application rate on the organic fields. And this can lead to this greater microbial functional capability and the greater abundance. Which one is the most important? We don't really know. It might be that the bromide is, but the compost certainly had a role to play. So the kind of the ecology in me says, oh yeah, this was a transdisciplinary study because we had farmers that were involved, and they were involved from the beginning. We sat down at the table with them, in particular two that really helped us organize this. The geneticists like to call it a ecogenomic study. And when I first heard that, I said, what? I said, okay, but that's good. So I call it a transdisciplinary ecogenomic strawberry study. I'm a very inclusive kind of guy. So transdisciplinary means that as a team, we integrated academic and non-academic knowledge. The non-academics are the farmers. If we would not have had the farmers on the team, then it would have been interdisciplinary. And you set common goals, so those goals were set at the beginning. The ecogenomic is the study that spans multiple levels, so it goes from genes to strawberry ecosystems all the way up to the consumer tasting the berries. And so in addition to the soil quality results, we found, in other words, improved soil health, basically. We found higher quality strawberries. The organic berries did have higher vitamin C, significantly so. They rotted more slowly. That totally surprised me. And they had less water, so about 10% less water. And yet they were really juicy. And so when you buy a pound of these organic berries from these three varieties, you're getting more bang for your buck in that 1 pound clamshell. The taste tests were a draw on two of the varieties, and on one of the varieties across all the taste tests from sweetness to overall flavor and even appearance, the organic Diamante was favored. And when they do the taste test, they come in this little booth. You have to offer, it's people on campus, so people from 18 to 70. You have to offer them. We have a creamery there. They make ice cream, so you offer them an ice cream to eat the good food. So to eat the strawberry, you give them the ice cream afterwards. They get a little card. Yeah. And so they come in this booth, and there's a red light on, so they cannot, when they're tasting the strawberries, they cannot see the redness because that biases you. And they don't know it's organic conventional. Then that red light goes off, white light comes on, and then they evaluate the aesthetics of it. So it's real technical. So, second to last slide. All of this, so 25 years, we're back to that initial slide in a sense where I showed you those two samples. Soil quality on the left axis, time on the right, carbon in the thick black line. And as carbon increases, in general, this is what happens in the soil. Aggregation and infiltration improve. Your water holding capacity improves. Your nutrient holding capacity, cation change capacity improves. Your productivity improves. There are studies that show organic matter increasing. You can add more fertilizer, fine, but the higher the organic matter, you're going to have higher productivity, and the environmental quality improves. And I think that the studies that my research teams have done certainly show this, and all the data we saw in the previous talk pretty much showed the same thing. So I really like the emphasis on carbon, and John was talking about the ability of organic systems and practices to really help, especially in developing countries, and I agree with that. When you start looking at South Asia and Africa, a common theme in many of those soils is degradation, and you only can, it's good to have, I'm familiar with the Millennium Village Project, that shot at the beginning to get things rolling, but you have to build up the organic matter. You do. You've got to get that carbon back in the soil, so you've got to have practices to do that. So with that, thank you, John Durant.